Today is January 19th, Thursday morning at the JCC. This is our second year of studying Providence and Theodicy. We spent the full year on Providence and Theodicy in the Bible, and this second year we are looking at later sources, and until now, over a third of the year, we spent it on Providence and Theodicy in Chazal, in the Midrash and Talmud, and today, right now, at this very minute, we're beginning the next stage, which is Providence and Theodicy in medieval Jewish philosophy. And within this category of medieval Jewish philosophy, we're going to study two primary thinkers. Perhaps we'll also see a bit of a third, but it's two primary thinkers. They are the Rambam, Maimonides, and the Ralbag. The Ralbag.
What?
A Rambag?
Ralbag. We're beginning
down.
Right now the Rambam.
Yeah.
Right, I'll put on the board the Rambam. And of course, Rambam, that's R-M-B-M, Rabbi Moshe ben Maimon. And in addition to the Rambam, we'll spend quite a long amount of time on the Ralbag. And the Ralbag is R-L-B-G, Rabbi Levi ben Gershom.
Rabbi
Levi
ben Gershom. He is called Gersonides in Latin. But we're not speaking Latin here. We can speak Jewish. In Jewish, he's the Ralbag, Rabbi Levi ben Gershom. But it'll be quite a number of weeks until we get to him, because there's enough to do in the Rambam.
But where is he?
Provence.
Where?
Provence.
Southern France.
Provence. Like many, many, good Jewish thinkers. Southern France. The Rambam, of course, was born in Spain, and he spent most of his life in Egypt as leader of the Jewish community there. The Rambam lived about 69 years, and he died in 1204. The Guide to the Perplexed, they're going to learn today, and next week, and the week after, and the week after, and the week after, and even more. The Guide to the Perplexed is one of his last works. It was written in the last decade of his life. It was written in Arabic, actually as a set of letters to one of his primary students. It was translated into Hebrew by Shmuel ibn Tibon, and this was done in the last 5 years of the Rambam's life, so that the Hebrew translator did have the opportunity of corresponding with the Rambam in order to clarify certain issues, but they never had the possibility actually of getting together because the Rambam died before they had their first meeting. We're going to read from the English translation, which was done at the University of Chicago by Professor Shlomo Pinis many, many years ago. This translation, it's in two volumes in the paperback, one volume in the hardcover, put out at the University of Chicago. Shlomo Pinis' translation is considered to be absolutely the best in any modern language. There are others available, other translations on the internet, but it's not worth it.
I have a translation by Friedlander.
Right, by Friedlander, it's not worth it. I'm not saying it's terrible, but compared to this translation, no comparison. So,
I had a general opinion against yours.
It's not my opinion at all. It's a fact. You know, all you see how rarely I say that?
I've never heard you say that before.
Right, I never say that. But here, this is what all scholars, all students of Maimonides know. It's written in hundreds of different journals.
What's the name again?
This is the translation. The name of the translator, Shlomo Pinis from the University of Chicago. Of course, this is many years ago. You could get it in soft cover in two volumes.
Shlomo who? I can't make out the last name.
Pinis. P-I-N-E-S.
P-I-N-E-S.
He was an Israeli. It's an Israeli name.
Pines in English, huh?
I pronounce it the way it's pronounced. Sorry about that. If you don't want to say it, that's what it is. So, without further ado, we're going to read. Now, the Guide to the Perplexed is a medieval tract of philosophy. It's not easy in any language. We'll find it to be difficult, to be obscure, but I think by careful reading, we'll be able to find some very beautiful and very deep interpretations here. And at every stage, we can ask ourselves, of all the different rabbinic agadot that we saw in the past 4 months, which of them is the Rambam's opinion here rejecting? Which of them is the Rambam's opinion here accepting? So why don't we just run right into it and begin. The guide has three parts. We're learning the third part. All the material we'll learn by and large, the next few weeks is from the third part, and we're beginning at the end of chapter 11. Of course,
what makes part 3 that more important than the others? I'm just curious.
Part 3 deals by and large with issues that are still considered to be relevant today, and that is primarily because most of the issues dealt with in Part 3 are more Jewish. Okay. This is a work of philosophy, general theology, and not all of it is related to what people consider to be Judaism per se.
Okay.
But the third part deals a lot about Torah, a lot about mitzvot, a lot again about our subject of providence. Okay, let's begin here. We've been in the middle of a matter, but we just can't read the whole thing, and everything is connected to everything else. We're going to begin here at the end of chapter 11, the third part, second line. Rather, all his acts, those of God, of course, may he be exalted, are an absolute good, for he only produces being, and all being is a good.
Where do you read the second line?
The end of the second line.
Okay, I see.
Oh, okay.
Before you get to the end of the second
okay.
line, why does the title say Guide to the Perplexed? Then the heading of this is the Guide of the Perplexed.
Ooh, that's very good. That's a real Talmudic question. There's no meaning to that. That's really my error. I used a English translation which is not exactly identical to the one that our particular translator, Shlomo Pinus, used. In Hebrew, Moreh Nevuchim, guide perplexed. And you have to supply the, a conjunction you would call it?
Preposition.
And technically speaking, in that form, the preposition is of. For example, we have in Hebrew, Beit Sefer,
right.
The house of the book. Beit Cholim, house of the sick.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That construct form in English is house of, place of, book of. So technically it's the God of the perplexed. But really, in colloquial English, it makes as much sense, if not more, to say the guide for the perplexed, or the guide to the perplexed. But it's the same book. But Harry, thank you for a real good Talmudic kushya. All his acts, I'm again beginning at the end of the second line of page 440 in the Pinus translation, all his acts, may he be exalted, are an absolute good. For he only produces being, and all being is a good. On the other hand, all the evils are privations with which an act is only connected in the way we have explained, namely through the fact that God has brought about matter into existence provided with the nature it has, namely a nature that consists in matter always being concomit of privation as is known. And of course, you're going to ask me to explain that, which I will. It's a summary of the last two pages. I didn't want to bring the whole thing. So, the example that the Rambam brings on the in the previous pages, what he's talking about, is the relationship between light and darkness. And another example he brings is the relationship between life and death. Let's talk about darkness and light. Says the Rambam, there's no such thing as darkness. Darkness is not an entity. It's not something that exists. Darkness is merely the lack of light. And therefore, you really cannot say in an exact sense that God created darkness. In an exact sense, God created light, and wherever God's light doesn't extend, there's darkness.
The absence of the
word used in this translation is privation. Mm-hmm. Absence, privation. The same thing goes with death. God did not create dead people. All he did is create people that live for a non-infinite amount of time. And when they stop living, we call the state they're in dead. But dead is not a state. It's just a privation of life.
So you would say he deprived them of their life.
God deprived them of their life, but he didn't make them dead.
Well, if you deprive one of their life,
then the result is death.
No life.
Exactly. Just like when you take away light, The result is darkness. But we don't even have to talk. We're just at the beginning now of God taking away light or taking away life, but merely, to be more exact, wherever God's life doesn't extend to, and wherever His light does not extend to, when you come to that end, you come to that boundary, then you've come to the privation of such, which is called, respectively, death or darkness. Harry.
What was the light that God created in Bereshit?
Whatever, but it's not going to be relevant here. But I don't know.
It went from the sun because the sun went to the light.
But it's a different subject. It's a completely different subject.
Talk about light.
Light is only an example here. We're talking about the concept of what's called habitus and privation. Habitus is the thing itself. Privation is its lack. God didn't create privations. He only created limited habitus. Then the Rambam says, in the material that we're now summarizing, that we do have a verse that says that God created day and night. God created life and death. But says the Rambam, that's only in an indirect sense. In a direct sense, God did not and does not create death, and God did not and does not create darkness. I think that's enough of a summary of what came earlier. Let's read now again the second line and henceforth of page 440. Say it again?
He did create it in Bereshit. He said he doesn't create it, but he did.
What?
The Bible says so.
What?
That God created light.
I said God doesn't create darkness.
No.
Of course He creates light.
You said God doesn't create light.
If I said that, then I was standing on my head and not thinking. But God creates the habitus. He doesn't create the privation. That's the philosophical understanding. So again, what I read earlier, I'll read again. All His acts, may He be exalted, are an absolute good. For He only produces being, that is to say, habitus, and all being is a good. On the other hand, all the evils are privations, with which an act is only connected in the way we have explained, right? The privations are related to God's act, not in a direct sense, but only in an indirect sense. Namely, through the fact that God has brought matter into existence, provided with the nature it has, namely, a nature that consists in matter always being a concomitant of privation as is known. What that means to say is the physical world, matter, is never, by its nature, is not eternal. It's rather always in a process of coming to being and passing away. It's not stable. That's not a good word. It's not inanimate.
Static.
It's not static.
Not static.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Right. It might be stable, but it's not static. Thank you very much. We have a philosopher here. Right? The very nature of matter, as opposed to the nature of spirit, perhaps, the nature of matter, the nature of corporality, is that it is not static. That's its very nature. And if that's the way God created it, then that's the way He wants it. We'll talk about that later. It's good. All matter is good in and of itself. But one of the ramifications of matter being what it is that it's not static, which means that it always comes to a certain privation. God didn't create the privation, but the privation is a necessary concomitant of the nature of matter, which means that human beings will die. God isn't making them die. God just created them of matter, and the nature of matter is it doesn't always live. The same thing with light. The nature of light is that it has a boundary. And when it comes to its boundary, you have darkness there. God didn't create the darkness, but God created light as a function of matter. And the nature of matter is it's not infinite and it's not static. The Rambam assumes here that anything that God creates, any habitus, any existence, is by nature good. Now, the assumption is it's better to be than not to be. It's better to be than not to be.
Sounds like Hamlet.
Right? And no, Hamlet asked the question.
Me?
I'm answering the question.
Right?
To be or not to be, the philosophic answer is to be. And the truth is that in an intuitive fashion, I think we would all agree.
Yeah.
Almost everyone agrees that being is better than non-being. And therefore, everything that God created, which is only being. God didn't create any non-being. Non-being is only the lack of being. God didn't create any non-being, only created being. And if all being is good, then everything God created is good. There's nothing bad that He created. There might be things we perceive as bad because we perceive the privation as bad, but God didn't create the privation. That's just the nature of the matter that God used to create.
So we don't blame Him for death.
Don't blame Him for death.
Any more than you would blame a doctor who takes a patient off the life support system.
Thank God for life, and know that a necessary corollary of life is
death.
As the Rambam goes on to say next page, there cannot be life without death. There cannot be life without death. That's the nature of corporality that always comes to an end.
Is this go back to Genesis? Is that has it always been the case prior to before they partook of the fruit of the tree?
Good question. Yeah. But the Rambam is saying that it is.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. Okay, that's a good introduction. Let's go on.
The question is whether a man is evil or not, God created him, and they're not inherently evil then.
God created free will, as it's about to say.
He created the malaria bug. He created the polio bug. All the bad things.
And He created man who could eliminate it.
Good points, right?
What about these frozen beings, like Ted Williams, for example? You know, he's frozen. But
who?
But he's kept in a state of frozen. You know, he's frozen. He's not dead. I mean, he's dead. But they believe that once they learn the secret of cell, what do you call it?
Something with a CR is the name. Cryosome. Cryogenics.
Okay.
Cryogenics.
Maybe.
Cryogenics.
Is that what it is?
Fine.
They think maybe they could bring them back to life.
Okay.
So, you know, everything's not black and white.
Everything's not black and white.
Although they haven't done it yet.
No.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so we're going to read on. Hence,
a lot of things haven't been done.
It is the cause of all passing away and of all evil. The nature of matter is the cause of all passing away and of all evil. For this reason, all the things that were not provided by God with this matter are not subject to passing away and to being attained by any of the evils. In other words, had God created something that wasn't made of matter, and it wasn't corporal, wasn't physical, it might not have these privations that we're talking about, these ends of its existence. And the Rambam believes that there's such a thing as spiritual beings that are not physical.
Angels.
And therefore, these things don't apply to them. And indeed, the spiritual beings are called by our tradition, angels,
what
malachim.
What about fallen angels? They don't...
Okay. The Rambam is part of a scientific tradition that believes that the planets are...
alive. They're alive.
They're alive. They have souls. And we call this... The word angel refers to the souls of the planets. And furthermore, the planets are made of a material that's not of the type we're talking about. It doesn't come to being, and it doesn't pass away. It's eternal matter. So the Rambam believes that the planets don't get sick and don't die, even though they are alive. But that's just to explain the one sentence there. We don't have to go into this in order to understand what we're talking about. And this wasn't the Rambam's personal belief. This was science of his time.
And he was very ahead of his time in many ways.
Yes. Accordingly, the true reality of the act of God in its entirety is the good. For the good is being, as he said, right? Being, by definition, is good.
Good.
And God created being, and He didn't create non-being. For this reason, the book that has illuminated the darkness of the world, that is to say, the Bible, has enunciated literally the following statement: and God saw everything that He had made, and behold, it was very good. It doesn't say that the things He didn't make are very good, but things that He did make, which are the habitus, they are very good, by definition. Even the existence of this inferior matter, he calls matter inferior, because compared to spirituality, which is static, it is an inferior thing. But as far as matter goes, it is what it is. It's the best it could be. It's perfect as far as matter goes. Even the existence of this inferior matter, whose manner of being is to be a concomitant of privation entailing death and all evils, things that we call evils, but are privations. All this is also good in view of the perpetuity of generation and the permanence of being through succession. That is a hint to things the Rambam will say later. But he's basically saying that the nature of matter is to be in flux, not to be static. And the fact that it is in flux is what allows there to be procreation and future generations. But it also entails death. And therefore, says the Rambam, you can't ask for the cessation of death without asking for the cessation of procreation and future life. They are part and parcel of the same thing. The fact that matter is what it is, that it is not static. And it changes, and it develops. And the development process has something that we call good, that's little babies being born, and something we call bad, which is death. But they're really part of the same thing. You can't have one without the other. And it's, he says you can't have one without the other, not because of overpopulation. Not because if we stopped dying and just had children, there'd be no room to put everyone. That's not the reason. That's an accident. It's a so fine place on the moon to put people. That's an accident. No, essentially, the fact that there's death and the fact that there's birth is part of the same process. Part of the same fact of matter being what it is.
Yin and yang.
That doesn't explain anything for me.
Go,
well,
and it will.
It's saying that it's two sides of the same
of the same coin.
Of the same coin, and in effect, that you can't have a one-sided coin. In effect, you have to have two sides. So
can't have a one-sided coin.
Opposite
and
reverse. But I think, what is that? Yin and yang is what? Hindu?
Hindu.
No, Chinese.
Well, that's
not Hindu. The I Ching.
I Ching?
Okay.
Did I hear you correctly? You said he took into account overpopulation?
I did not say that.
Oh.
I said overpopulation is completely irrelevant to our discussion. Mm-hmm. I said the reason, when the Rambam says there can't be. Okay.
Right.
And then the Rambam quotes something we saw in the Talmud ourselves. For this reason, Rabbi Meir interpreted the words, and behold, it was very good, and behold, death was good. We saw that in the Talmud. The quote is from Genesis Rabbah, but we actually saw it quoted in the Talmud itself. Death is good because death is part and parcel of life. There cannot, and the truth is, I can go one step further in what I said. It's not just that you can't have procreation without death, but you can't have life without death. The very definition of life is a being that's always developing, always changing, there's always metabolism. And the very nature of metabolism is that the process wears itself out. So it's not just that you can't have procreation without death, you can't have life. For what life means without death.
Well, I guess it sort of is the cycle of, you know, birth, death, rebirth. I guess he's acknowledging the cycle of the material world, because even, you know, stars die or recreate.
The Rambam didn't know that.
I didn't know that, but I mean, all matter, that's not spiritual. Spiritual is static, but all matter everywhere, there's always this cycle of birth, death, rebirth.
Right, it's the very nature of the thing, and to ask for it to be otherwise is to ask not to have the world as it is.
You said that he thought the planets had souls. Okay. Apparently he didn't distinguish between tangible items that have what we think of as life and tangible items that don't. For example, he's saying a rock has soul.
No. The planets are made of a different type of matter than everything in the sublunar world. Everything below the moon is made up of matter that is in a process of coming to being and passing away, but the matter that is above the moon is of a different quality.
Well, okay,
completely.
Then he's saying that there are two categories of physical things.
Yes.
There's ones with life, as human beings, animals, plants, and those without life, which are like rocks or soil or whatever. Is he making that distinction?
No, the planets, they have a more superior matter that they're made of.
But yeah. I'm talking about below the moon.
Oh, below, yeah, right.
He's making that distinction.
He didn't...
not here, but I mean...
It exists.
Look at his philosophy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But there are planets that don't have moons, so...
No, that
definition doesn't hold, does it?
No. The word sublunar simply divides the world, the universe, into the Earth and everything above the Earth.
Well,
the moon is the lowest of the planets.
We have millions of Earths.
It doesn't matter. There's a concept here. It's a concept.
Did he have a concept like that?
The Rambam doesn't know about moons of planets. For him, the moon is a planet. He knows simply about bodies, heavenly bodies.
Right.
And the lowest of the heavenly bodies is called the moon. And therefore, everything in the sky is called everything on Earth is called the sublunar world, because it's below the lowest planet. That's all. That's all.
He is not an astronomer.
The Rambam actually was an astronomer.
He was.
And he was actually a very innovative astronomer. And he, in certain aspects, called into question the prevailing astronomy that had been accepted since the days of Aristotle and before. But let's not get into the history of astronomy. Okay, remember what I have told you in this chapter and understand it. Then everything the prophets and the sages have said will become clear to you regarding the good being in its entirety, an essential act of the deity. Bereishit Rabbah says, literally, nothing that is evil descends from above. Okay. So now that we understand that, we already have a bit of a perspective on theodicy. You can already imagine the Rambam saying, if someone complains, why, God forbid, did my son die? Why did God do this?
It wasn't God.
And you can imagine the Rambam saying, in a certain sense, it wasn't God. Of course, the Rambam wouldn't use those words, because in a different sense, it is God. God created matter as it is. But you can't blame God for it, because the death of your son is a necessary consequence of the fact that your son was alive.
Then why do we pray to God when someone is sick? I mean, God has no power.
You have a very good question. Uh-huh. Right? That is a very good question. The Rambam's going to have to deal with that.
I can't dig him up and ask him.
I hope you don't. I hope you don't try.
If you dig him up and ask him, you'll get the same answer that you're getting if you don't dig him up.
Okay, so let's read further. We're not going to read chapter 11.
I understand why it's called perplexed.
And if you go forward to the second side of the page, you see that the top says Guide of the Perplexed, Part 3, Chapter 12. So I didn't photostat Chapter 11. Indeed, we're going from page, as you can see, 440 to 443. I skipped page 442 because we're skipping chapter 11 and we're picking up in chapter 12 where my bracket is on the right hand margin. See my bracket there?
Yeah.
That means that's where we're beginning. Okay. The greater part of the evils that befall its individuals, that is to say the individuals of the human species, are due to the latter. I mean the deficient individuals of the human species. What that means is, most of the things that we call evils, we do to ourselves. Humans do to other human beings. and keep God out of it. In a direct sense, keep God out of it. It is because of our own deficiency that we lament and we call for aid. We suffer because of evils that we have produced ourselves or our free will, but we attribute them to God. May He be exalted above this. Oh, what did he just say? He said, keep God out of all the evils that occur to us, because we do them to ourselves. I knew Harry would like this.
That's true, though. I think it's true. To me, true.
And often the Rambam says, may he be exalted. But now he says, may he be exalted above this. In other words, how could you possibly implicate God in the evils that happen on this earth? They're only evils from your perspective, but they're actually part and parcel of the greatest good, which is life, which is being.
So God is staying above all of the petty things that go on. It's just human beings.
It looks like that's what he's saying. Again, don't jump immediately to conclusions. There's a lot of material here. I'll read the line again. We suffer because of evils that we have produced ourselves of our free will, but we attribute them to God. May he be exalted above this, just as he explains in his book, saying, and of course he's quoting here from the Torah, the book of Deuteronomy, is corruption his? No, his children's is the blemish, and so on. Solomon too has explained this, saying, the foolishness of man perverteth his way, and his heart fretteth against the Lord. In other words, look at the way the Rambam often has very creative readings of verses. The foolishness of man perverteth his way, and his heart fretteth against the Lord. You might think that means that the heart fretteth against the Lord. You might think it means that human beings think of transgressing God's will. They fret against the Lord. But what the Rambam understands it to mean is that while we pervert our own way, our foolish people, and we suffer for it, and then we go and blame God. Yeah, that's the way he's reading it. Let's look up the verse that he's just quoting from in the book of Deuteronomy. It's Deuteronomy chapter 32, verse 5.
Where is he quoting that?
Say it again, please. The quotes are in italics, and we just finished reading, is corruption his? No, his children's is the blemish, and so on.
Deuteronomy
32, 5.
Page 445 of the brand.
32, 5. This is Parshat Ha'azinu at the very end of the Torah. And I'm going to read from the beginning of chapter 32. Give ear, O heavens, and I will speak, and hear, O earth, the words of my mouth. Chapter 32 of Deuteronomy. Mm-hmm. My doctrine shall drop as the rain, my speech shall distill as the dew. As the small rain upon the tender herb, and as the showers upon the grass, because I will call on the name of the Lord, ascribe greatness to our God. He is the rock, his work is perfect. For all his ways are justice, a God of truth without any iniquity. Just and right is he. Not his the corruption, but the blemish of his sons. They are perverse and crooked generation. Do you thus requite the Lord of foolish people and unwise? Is not he the father that bought you? Is it not thee that made you? Etc. And you would think, usually the way we read this, is that Moses is coming out against the corruption and blemish of the Jewish people. And what corruption and blemish, what does that mean? That means the fact that they disobey the laws of the Torah. But the Rambam says, yes, that's what it means. But the laws of the Torah is something far, far wider in the eyes of the Rambam than what we usually take it to mean. The laws of the Torah are the laws of proper living within the framework of a material world. Not smoking is one of the laws of the Torah. Not because you need a modern-day halachic authority to tell you that. Because the Rambam understands that laws of the Torah are part and parcel of the quote-unquote laws of living according to and within the framework of us as corporal beings. So, keeping fit, eating the proper food, going to sleep on time, etc., 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 getting your yearly checkup. All those things are part and parcel of the laws of living as a corporal being. And if you're intelligent, you live according to the laws of corporality. If you're not intelligent and you think that you're one of the planets that will live forever, so you live according to the wrong laws. And when the verses say here, corrupt and blemished are the Jewish people, it doesn't only mean that they disobey laws of Shabbat and eat pig. It also means that they disobey the laws of living. And if you disobey laws of living, you're going to get zapped. And getting zapped, does it mean that God has to take his hand out of heaven and give you cancer, God forbid? Rather, that's the very nature of living in this world. That's the way matter was created, that if you don't follow the rules, you get zapped. Yeah. But get zapped means you zapped yourself, so why are you blaming God?
Yeah, but what if you're hit by a drunk driver? How do you disobey your rules?
So getting hit by a drunk driver is still an example of human beings causing their own demise, but it's not you personally, it's the species.
Wait. You're the hit team, not the hit toll.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, it's human beings hurting human beings. All of a sudden, this drunk driver jumps the curb, hits you, and kills you.
Right.
So what have you done to cause it?
You haven't done anything, but the human species has hurt itself.
I heard you say that bad things happen to us because of our own faults.
Yes.
But where was this Hittian fault?
So, to quote me, as quoted by you, bad things happen to us because of our own faults.
Right.
So if that's what I said, it's pretty close to what I said, right?
Yeah.
The question is, who is the us?
All of us.
You're interpreting it as the individual.
Well, I'm the one that's going to die, not the guy.
Listen for a second. The Rambam will go on to say immediately that there are three causes of the things we call evil. One of them I won't talk about right now. I'll let him talk about it. A second one is evils that human beings cause to other human beings. And the third is evils that human beings cause to themselves. Okay? Both of these two categories are things that human beings do and cause evil. Some do it to themselves, some do it to others, but it's all caused by human beings and it's not caused by an act of God. That's all.
Yeah.
Now, of course, we have to be careful with our language. Because in a certain sense, it is caused by an act of God, because God created us as we are. Created the world as it is, with free will.
No, that's not an act of God.
This is semantics. But it's important semantics. Because the Rambam, when we get to it, will claim that what he is espousing is actually providence. But it's a different type of providence. It's a providence that you might call a semantic reinterpretation of the words. It's a providence in which God doesn't intervene at any given moment and zap, but it's a providence indeed in which God created a world in which he wants it to happen as it happens. That's the nature of matter. And matter was created by him with all its privations. And he created free will with all the evils that result from free will. But he created free will. He could have created us without free will. But he believes that human beings having free will is the greatest good.
Yeah, but if we didn't have free will, we'd be automatons.
Right. And we wouldn't kill each other. And therefore, hear this. The fact that we kill each other is a necessary concomit of free will almost to the same degree that death is a necessary concomit of life of matter, of animate matter. You can't have one without the other. Just like you can't have life without death, you can't have free will without human beings sometimes
misusing,
drinking too much and driving over the sidewalk and running down my 10-year-old child, God forbid.
He just said, God forbid.
She's good.
When we first started this, we talked about the different basic concepts, one of which was that God created the world and stepped back and let it run on its own. Can we say,
I didn't say that that's the only way of looking at things.
No, one of the concepts that we looked at. My question is, at this point at least, is Maimonides saying that God, having done what he's done for the reasons that we just discussed just a few moments ago, does not intervene in order to change this concept of this world that's running on its own, man being evil to himself and others? Is this a theme that is consistent through all of his writings and beliefs, that God is there, has done it, but is going to let it run its course?
Yes and no, of course. At this point, it certainly looks like the Rambam is limiting God in the sense that you said, and that certainly is a major theme in most of his writings. On the other hand, we'll see as we read on that he does provide an arena for God's intervention, but at the same time he severely limits that arena, as we will see. Let me remind everyone of something we might have talked about in the past 7 years. Perhaps we didn't. I suppose we did. And that is the example, the case of two cars. One of them always has to be brought into the mechanic for readjustments. And the other runs perfectly for years upon years with no need to take it in to be fixed or readjusted. Clearly, we would say, which is the better car? The one that doesn't need to be constantly tinkered with. Says the Rambam, the same thing is true with the world. Which would be the better world? One in which the manufacturer always has to recall it and re-tinker with it and fix it? Or the one that the minute the car rolls out of the manufacturer's doors, it doesn't need any further tinkering with? Obviously, the second car is the better car, and the second world is the better world.
That's not a practical
But let me just finish. Wait a second. Let me just finish. The Rambam says that if you believe in a world full of miracles, it's like believing in a world that a car that God created always has to go back to the manufacturer for some retooling. Whereas a world without miracles is certainly a more perfect world because God likes it the way it is, and he doesn't need to keep tinkering with it. So that's just one example of what Jay was saying, that the Rambam certainly, by and large, has a view that God's creation is perfect and it doesn't require all of these periodic adjustments.
An example would be the fact that we would all be driving a 1923 Model T right now. So why need, you know, the Model T, it runs forever. And so why do you need another car? It was perfect at the time and we could still run it. And so why do you need...
Yeah, but the Model T, in its very original plan, didn't have bucket seats. In other words, it wasn't the best possible car that could be produced.
It was produced by an anti-Semite.
No, I had a 1923 Model T and it was a perfect car. You had to crank it occasionally. But, you know, if you took care of it and changed the oil, it would run forever. So why do you need anything? Why do you need a 1929 Model A?
Oh,
but it didn't have a trunk. And what I'm saying, it wasn't a perfect car.
It should be, Rabbi. You're talking to people. His car is 23, mine's 17 years old.
Okay, so we get the point.
No, the same idea about the universe. It continues to improve, and as I point out, you know, at our lifetime, you can have knee replacement, you can have you can have eye surgery, all these things that could not have been done 50, 75 years ago. So you're continually you're continually improving things.
Through human free will. Okay, that's a different story. Jay.
Well,
just following this for just another moment, it would seem then, at this point of our understanding from what Maimonides is saying, that there doesn't seem to be much incentive for man to be pious or good or any of those things, because this world, having been set in motion, is on, in a way, sort of on this perfect world, that the fate of each individual in that system is one which is independent of any type of piety or following the Torah or being a light unto the world. Is that an incorrect impression?
So it's an incorrect impression for the following reason. And this actually goes back to some things I hinted to a few minutes ago. The Rambam does not maintain the distinction that we maintain, usually, between religious law and natural law. The Rambam sees the Torah as an extension of natural law. The Rambam, let me be more specific. So the Rambam says that there is a great incentive to follow natural law, because if you don't, you'll make yourself sick. By natural, I mean the laws of the manufacturer that we're continually discovering that say you have to keep a certain weight and you have to exercise and you have to eat certain foods and sleep, etc. It's the natural laws. The Rambam sees the Torah as part and parcel of those. He doesn't see them separate from those. He says that the whole Torah has two purposes. The one purpose is the correct ordering of physical life, and the other purpose is the correct ordering of spiritual life. The correct ordering of physical life means human beings running themselves properly as individuals and running themselves properly as societies. And many of the laws have to do with that, whether it's love your neighbor as yourself or don't murder or don't steal. Those are very similar to what we call natural law. That's what society has to do to
police itself.
Not just police itself, but to live according to the manufacturer's suggested guidelines, and therefore live better and live longer. And then the Rambam further says, the second, as I said, goal of the Torah is to order spiritual life, that is to say, to teach truth. And the Rambam believes that knowing truth is analogous on the spiritual level to living properly on the physical level. Just like you must do what's good for matter, for your matter to sustain itself, so you have to do what's good for spirit, for your spirit to sustain itself. It's ultimately all for our own good. Just like a person who doesn't maintain his health loses his health and suffers for it, so a person who doesn't maintain his spiritual health, according to the Rambam, for example, he doesn't study truth but spends all his time
waiting for miracles?
Following the football games, but doesn't spend his time learning truth, ultimately, he is not fulfilling what human beings were made to be. And his intellect, which is the same thing as a soul, withers away. And he is just not living healthily on a spiritual level. So the whole Torah is about healthy living on the spiritual level and on the physical level. And therefore, putting everything together, there is a strong incentive indeed, reward and punishment for fulfilling the Torah, just like there's reward and punishment for fulfilling the doctor's orders. But that's all in the future.
I don't understand what you said. I didn't catch it about miracles.
I didn't say anything about miracles.
I thought I heard you say miracles.
I don't think I even mentioned them.
Maybe it's a miracle that I'm living here, but I heard miracles. Okay.
Now, he said that the world that requires miracles to keep going one that is like a car that needs tinkering and it's not...
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I thought it was hearing things.
Thank you.
what's funny is, I think it was Ben-Gurion said, a realist in Israel is someone who believes in miracles.
Okay. I'm a realist, I believe in miracles.
You said that?
If he says, I'm a realist, I believe in miracles.
Who said that?
Ben-Gurion.
Years ago.
Yes.
Yeah. We're going to go on now.
He made a lot of statements.
And you know what? I just realized there's something a bit deficient in the fact that I'm talking so much. I'd prefer to talk less and let the text talk, because you have to be careful of me. Perhaps I'll say something that's not in the text. And I really want the text to speak for itself.
If we could just understand this text without
that's
something.
Okay, so I have to explain it, but I shouldn't go so far and explain things we haven't read yet, because then I'm really
prejudiced.
But I'm prejudicing you. It's not good.
Well,
we're now in the last sentence of the first paragraph, that is the half of the page. The explanation of this lies in the fact that all the evils that befall man fall under one of three species. The first species of evil is that which befalls man because of the nature of coming to being and passing away. I mean to say, because of his being endowed with matter.
When you read that, in the middle here, or in the second paragraph, right here, showing the second paragraph.
Because of this, infirmities and paralytic afflictions befall some individuals, either in consequence of their original natural disposition, or they superintervene because of changes occurring in the elements, such as corruption of the air, or fire from heaven, or a landslide. Things happen because we're in a physical world. We have already explained that divine wisdom has made it obligatory that there should be no coming to be except through passing away. Again, it's the very nature of matter. It's the very nature of matter. Were it not for the passing away of the individuals, and passing away doesn't just mean death, it means the metabolic process, that things are always disintegrating and things are always being recreated. Were it not for the passing away of the individuals, the coming to be relating to the species would not continue.
Rabbi, is he saying here at this point an eruption of a volcano that spews horrible things into the air? Man is not being punished for being evil.
It looks like at this point he's saying what you just said.
Okay.
It does clearly look like that. Mm-hmm. It's just the nature of matter.
So what you're saying, Bruce, is that man, it was his fault for building on a volcano.
Very good point.
Yeah.
The Rambam didn't say that, but he'll say that in the next paragraph.
But he's man is responsible for his poor judgment.
But he's not responsible.
I mean, like Mount Etna.
But if man built 100 miles away from Mount Etna, and the wind and the prevailing wind 100 miles away brought the gases. And
that's right, like Pompeii. And
okay, we get the idea.
Which got even with the.
Thus, that pure beneficence, that munificence, that activity causing good to overflow are made clear. In other words, I know this is a very high standard I'm about to present, but if God forbid
again,
your best friend is killed by a volcano, in a certain sense your response should be, thank God that we live in a world of matter. It's better than living a world without matter, which is not living. And that death is a function of matter.
So why say thank God or God forbid? Why is it why do people say that?
Well, why say God forbid is a good question. But why say thank God? Because everything is good. And the things that are bad that are happening are simply necessary corollaries of the good.
Except at that moment. And for those people involved.
Right. Which means, and this is actually found in a section that we're not going to see, part of the problem in dealing with the issue of theodicy is the limitation of our perspective to the individual.
We can only see past our nose.
Because when someone close to me dies, I call that bad. Mm-hmm. for me, for the person who died, for the family. But if you take God's perspective, the larger perspective, that death is part and part of the good, because that death is a necessary corollary of the fact that we're alive. And being alive is good. So it really is a matter of perspective. The Rambam emphasizes that. Going beyond the limitations of the perspective of the individual.
But we were given, along with free will, a certain distance we can see, really, in our little world, which is beyond our nose, but not far.
So,
you know, we see a wave, but we don't see the tsunami.
So for the Rambam, it is indeed a religious imperative to expand your perspective. Right? Okay. He who wishes to be endowed with flesh and bones, and at the same time not be subject to impressions like disease and death, and not to be attained by any of the concomitants of matter, merely wishes, without being aware of it, to combine two contraries, namely to be subject to impressions and not to be subject to them.
Yin and yang.
It's Joe, the one, said. Joe's one-sided coin.
That's right.
Right. Which is foolish. It's just foolish.
But it's human.
Yes. And the Rambam will claim that so many of the distraught cries of those who experience themselves to be the objects of evil, of pain, of suffering, so many of those distraught cries are a result simply of misunderstanding. Not understanding that death is part of life.
I'm waiting for Harry to say the Holocaust.
It may not be because of coincidence.
No, their own misunderstanding, their own lack of ability to put it in the proper perspective. Their own lack of ability to go beyond their own noses.
We're talking about bad things happening to people.
Again, my child dies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you're going to an extreme. Well, let's take a non-extreme. You know, something bad happens to a person. Mm-hmm. But death is not involved, but it's something bad. And it could be just a coincidence in the wrong place at the wrong time. But he's committing it. But the person just saying this is life, and this is what happens in life, he's saying, God, why have you done this to me?
God didn't do
I
it.
Know that.
God I'm created saying, matter.
That's the misunderstanding. That's my point. That's the misunderstanding.
Again, yes, yes, yes. I experience something bad. My back itches. That's bad. That's terrible. I'm so angry at God for making my back itch.
Get a back scratcher.
Right? But expand your perspective and understand that back's itching is a necessary privation of the fact that we have skin.
That you have a back.
That we have a back. Thank you very much, Harry, that we have a back. And do I want to have a back? Why would I rather not have a back?
My back itches every now and then.
Okay.
But I have a back scratch.
But Rabbi, just a question for all of us. Can any one of us see going and listening to a Yom Kippur sermon given this way?
Yes, you can, if we take into account what I said to Jay 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, but would 99.9% of the people in the congregation not walk out and misunderstand?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So this is written for the cream of the crop, says the Rambam. This is written for those unique individuals who are searching for a larger perspective on the meaning of life, absolutely. The Rambam actually says that he's embedded in the text certain mechanism to prevent the inferior of the population from reading this book. He wants them to get confused after reading one line and close it. And only those who are worthy of reading it will go on.
That's true. unfortunately.
So we need one more congregation in town.
So let's prove ourselves worthy by going on. We're near the bottom of this page. For if he were not liable to receive impressions, right, changes, developments, he would not have been generated to begin with, right? You couldn't have been born if you didn't accept the fact that the nature of matter is to have changes happening. It's not static. And what exists of him would have been one single individual and not a multitude of individuals belonging to one species. What he's saying, and this relates to something Chip asked a few minutes ago, what he's saying is that if you don't want if you don't want disease, it means you don't want reproduction. If you don't want death, it means you don't want life as we know it, which really means you don't want a human species. You want one human being that lives forever.
Not exactly. No. You might say you would like one human being that lives a reasonably long time without all the hurdles to get over.
But then how does it not live forever?
No, I didn't say it didn't live forever. I'm saying a reasonable length of an allotted span of time, whatever that happens to be for that age.
But why would it live only that amount of time and not forever?
Because
the body wears out.
If you want a body that wears out, then you have to agree that there's process.
Or you could just be zapped.
If you want something that never has an end, then you want something that's not like what
Perfect.
We know today.
Perfect.
But that's just plain common sense. You don't have to be perplexed to know that.
I'm not sure you're right, Harry. Most people are not capable of thinking about these things and accepting the truth of them.
That's why. I don't mean that disrespectfully, but most people do not really think.
No.
The Rambam agrees with you 100%.
Rabbi, excuse me, but didn't Moses, don't we say somewhere Moses lived to be of a certain age with clear eyesight?
Yes, it does say that.
So why not? We live too. There's your drop-off point. 120 without all the aches and pains in yourself.
That's not the nature of matter.
Of course not. I'm just making a suggestion for your next prayers.
The next time you create a world, you ought to do that.
That's right. Leave it to a Jewish grandmother.
Jay.
I mean, I'm only trying to say at this point of our understanding of what the Rambam is trying to say is that it's okay to accept that within this concept that life may be difficult and so forth, but it seems as though it doesn't take into account, just because it is a mechanism that matter is always changing, that it has to change for some people in a way that is unexpectedly worse than other people whose changes are unexpectedly better.
Yeah.
I mean, they're both in a state of changing, but it doesn't address the question of why would it be if some people's lives are so difficult and others are not so difficult, even though, I'm not saying they'll live forever, but even though they haven't fulfilled their potential.
Right.
That's my issue.
Yeah, the Rambam, I don't think he has a good answer to that. His answer, as far as I see it, is twofold. Again, I'm not saying it's a good answer. First of all, he says if we really examine things properly, we see that the vast, vast, vast majority of evils are inflicted by ourselves. And then he says, as far as a small amount of cases that are not inflicted by ourselves, and ourselves means myself to myself and myself to you, and the rest of the case, he says, are anomalies, and that's just the nature of matter to have anomalies. Is that a good answer? I'm not sure it is, but that's what he says.
It's a partial answer.
Yeah.
But the Rambam did, unfortunately, had no idea of the whole theory of our genes. In other words, we have certain genes that makes us more susceptible to certain, you know, certain diseases than others. Why some people come down with X disease, another person doesn't, and so forth and so on. You know, we're finding out through science that because of our genes, we are more susceptible to a certain disease.
Yes.
Nothing to do with God's action.
No.
Well,
those genes are a part of God's creation of how things are going to work.
But God doesn't tell anybody, you're going to have these kind of genes, you're going to have those kind of genes.
Yeah, and again, that's the system that God created.
On the other hand,
let's go on, please. We have to see a large body of material to have an intelligent discussion.
But we can know.
Let's go on.
Where are you now?
At the top of page 444, which is chapter 12.
Rabbi, the footnote 12.
Yes.
Is Munch the Norwegian artist?
No. Munch was one of the first modern redactors, editors of the text of the guide. In other words, in the 1900s, he took the text of the guide in Arabic and he published it with footnotes.
Okay, thanks.
Galen was one of the first Greek doctors, right? Did I get that right?
Galen.
Had put it well in the third of the Book of Utilities, saying, "Do not set your mind on the vain thought that it is possible that of menstrual blood and sperm there should be generated a living being that does not die, is not subject to pain, is in perpetual motion, or is it as brilliant as the sun. It's impossible. It's against the nature of matter." This dictum of Galen draws attention to one popular case falling under a general proposition. That proposition is as follows. Everything that is capable of being generated from any matter whatsoever is generated in the most perfect way in which it is possible to be generated out of that specific matter. The deficiency attaining the individuals of the species corresponds to the deficiency of that particular matter of the individual. It's given genes as they are, and given cells as they are,
right,
a certain percentage is always going to be defective. That's just the nature of matter. Now, the ultimate term and the most perfect thing that may be generated out of blood and sperm is the human species, with its well-known nature consisting in man's being a living, rational, and mortal being. Thus, the species of evils must necessarily exist. In other words, all of the diseases, they must necessarily exist to a certain degree.
But we can eradicate.
Okay, that's a different question. That is the very nature of matter. Okay, so we are...
I'm still on 444.
Right. Okay. That's the very nature of things. Continuing on.
Where?
On page 444.
Oh, okay.
Withal, you will find that the evils of this kind that befall men are very few and occur only seldom. That's what I just said earlier, that most of evils are done human beings to human beings. Mm-hmm. But evils, that is to say, privations that are of the very nature of matter, they are few and far between. And just think in our own world, right? Mm-hmm. How many people die by artificially induced famine? How many people die from wars? How many people die from murder, from terrorism, as opposed to how many people die from natural disasters? Mm-hmm. And most bad things are caused by us.
Third of Europe died with the Black Plague. That's not an insignificant event.
Right.
And you can find others similar to that.
What about the
The Rambam lived before the Black Plague.
Well, I know, but I'm just saying that even I'm sure in his time and before that, I mean in he was living at the kind of toward the end of the Dark Ages, I guess. But within that, there were all kinds of pestilence, famines, and other things that were not necessarily...
But you know what? I wonder in what category the Rambam would put the Black Plague. As a doctor, would he put it as something caused by the nature of matter or something caused by human beings?
No, it's by the nature of matter. I mean, the pathogenesis of that is a very complex thing. It's a flea on a rat that infects a person and so forth, and this disease is spread.
But being that it could be dealt with through proper hygiene, right? So in a certain sense, it's a human fault.
It was not dependent upon hygiene. It was dependent upon a source of pestilence, in this instance, a bacteria, that moved from one species to another species. It had nothing to do with hygiene. I mean, they didn't know what it was doing then,
right.
But hygiene wasn't like the issue.
Uh-huh. Okay, good. I'm not the wrong pump. I can't defend everything he says. So, you will find.
I'm only saying that very few and occur seldom. I'm not sure that is correct.
It's occurring
even
all
then.
The time.
All right, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but it probably is based on the Rambam's understanding as a doctor that almost all disease is a function of human beings not living properly.
But before they found a cure for infantile paralysis,
okay.
Worldwide,
okay.
Look at all the children that were afflicted. And then when they did away with DDT, they said, oh, you can't do DDT. It increased tremendously the incidence of what did you get in the South Pacific?
Malaria.
Malaria, right.
Okay, again, let's read on as far as we can. For you will find cities existing for thousands of years that have never been flooded or burned. Also, thousands of people are born in perfect health, whereas the birth of an infirm human being is an anomaly, or at least if someone objects to the word anomaly and does not use it, such an individual is very rare. For they do not form a hundredth or even a thousandth part of those born in good health.
Right.
Okay. That's category number one. Let's just see the whole argument.
When you had child mortality rates of 20%, that was...
I don't know what the mortality rates were in the Rambam's time in Egypt.
20%, 22%.
At least. Yeah, you're right, Jim. Mm-hmm. Very high. Come in.
The evils of the second kind are those that men inflict upon one another, such as tyrannical domination of some of them over others. These evils are more numerous than those belonging to the first kind, and the reasons for them are numerous and well known. The evils in question also come from us. However, the wrong man has no device against them. At the same time, there is no city existing anywhere in the whole world in which evil of this kind is in any way widespread and predominant among the inhabitants of the city. But its existence is also rare. In other words, this type of evil is rare, but it's not as rare as the first type of evil. In the cases, for example, when one individual surprises another individual and kills him or robs him at night, this kind of evil becomes common, reaching many people only in the course of great wars, and such events, too, do not form the majority of occurrences upon the earth taken as a whole. The evils of the third kind are those that are inflicted by any individual among us by his own actions. This is what happens in the majority of cases. And these evils are much more numerous than those of the second kind. Most things that happen are our own fault concerning ourselves. And some things are someone else's fault concerning ourselves. And a few tiny things are the very essence of matter.
But he lived during the Crusades, which were...
The Rambam, although he lived during the Crusades, had no experience of the Crusades.
Well, he was in Egypt. Saladin.
I thought he was a doctor to Saladin, so he had to be familiar with what was happening then.
I'm sorry that I don't know enough to talk about it. The Rambam in his medical writings goes on and on and on.
Yes.
But the stupidity of human beings is what they do to their own bodies.
Yes.
All men lament over evils of this kind, and it is only seldom that you find one who is not guilty of having brought them upon himself. He who is reached by them deserves truly to be blamed. To him one may say what has been said, this has been to you of your own doing. It has also been said, he doeth it that would destroy his own soul. Solomon has said about evils of this kind, the foolishness of man perverteth his way, and so on. He also has explained with reference to evils of this kind that they are done by man to himself, his dictum being, behold, this only have I found, that God made man upright, but they have sought out many thoughts. And that's a verse, for example.
Does he give example to the third kind?
Yes,
I know
he
what he's saying.
Yeah.
He'll give lots of examples.
Yeah.
But notice again the way the Rambam interprets verses in a fashion that we normally wouldn't have thought of. This verse that we just brought from Ecclesiastes, "Behold, this only have I found, that God made man upright, but they have sought out many thoughts." We usually read that to think about people who don't observe the laws of the Torah. But here, according to the Rambam, it means people don't absorb and observe the laws of living. These thoughts are those that have been vanquished by these evils. About this kind it has also been said, "For affliction cometh not forth from the dust, neither doth trouble spring out of the ground." And for the Rambam, what it means is, it's our own fault. It doesn't come from the ground, it comes from ourselves. That's not the simple meaning in context. Immediately afterwards, it explained that this sort of evil is brought into existence by man. "For it is said, for man is born into trouble," and so on. That's the book of Job. In context, we certainly didn't read it like that. But that's the way the Rambam understands it. This kind is consequent upon all vices. I mean concupiscence for eating, drinking, and copulation, and doing these things with excess in regard to quantity or irregularly, or when the quality of the foodstuffs is bad. For this is the cause of all, the Rambam says, all corporal and psychical diseases and ailments. With regard to the diseases of the body, this is manifest. With regard to the diseases of the soul, due to this evil regimen, they arise in two ways. In the first place, through the alteration necessarily affecting the soul in consequence of the alteration of the body, the soul being a corporal faculty. It having already been said that the moral qualities of the soul are consequent upon the temperament of the body. In other words, if you eat too much, you get into the habit of eating too much, and now you've affected your soul, and then and your soul becomes sick.
Yeah, I mean, somebody who eats themselves into morbid obesity, and the consequences of it to everybody around them.
And consequences not only to the person's physical body, but to his soul.
Well, it's a death wish.
And in the second place, because of the fact that the soul becomes, familiarized with and accustomed to unnecessary things, and consequently acquires the habit of desiring things that are unnecessary either for the preservation of the individual or for the preservation of the species, and this desire is something infinite. For whereas all necessary things are restricted and limited, that which is superfluous is unlimited. Wait a second, is that all necessary things are restricted? I don't understand that sentence. I think the Rambam means the opposite.
Which one you talk about? Number one.
The one beginning for whereas.
No. Makes sense.
Right.
Makes
sense.
Mm-hmm.
Not right. Necessary things restricted and limited.
Makes sense to me.
Necessary things are like water.
Yes.
And air, which he goes on to say are unlimited. Look as it goes on.
Mm-hmm.
If, for instance, your desire is directed to having a silver plate, it would be better if it were gold.
Mm-hmm.
Some have crystal plate, and perhaps plate is procured that is made of emeralds and rubies whenever these stones are to be found. Thus, every ignoramus who thinks worthless thoughts is always sad and despondent because he is not able to achieve the luxury attained by someone else. In most cases, such a man exposes himself to great dangers, such as a rise in sea voyages in the service of kings, his aim therein being to obtain these unnecessary luxuries.
Well, talk about a negative person, or an envious person. I mean, what he has is not enough. He needs something better.
And the Rambam claims that that's most of us.
Despondent.
And the Rambam claims that's most of us.
But it keeps artists alive.
By the way,
it may be most of us today, because I hate to say it, I have friends and their whole life is chasing the buck. That's the whole life.
And the Rambam says that it's not only in the 21st century, it was also in the 12th century.
Mm-hmm.
That most of our efforts to acquire material possessions are misguided and unnecessary.
Mm-hmm.
And most of those efforts bring us ultimately to ruin either on the level of the soul and the temperament, or on the level of physical illness in the body.
Right.
Now, by the way, there might be a fascinating biographical or autobiographical note in the sentence we just read. The Rambam suffered many, many years psychologically over the death of his brother David, who died at sea in a shipwreck, trading in order to amass wealth to support his brother, the Rambam.
Right.
Let me finish.
He was a main support of my mom.
And as a result of that shipwreck, not only did the Rambam enter into a deep depression for many years, he also had to go to work. What was his work? The service of kings.
Yeah.
So these two cases here, sea voyages and the service of kings, that describes his brother and himself, respectively.
Well, he became the official or physician to the caliph of Egypt.
Yeah.
And he often laments the fact that his service of the king caused him to lose his health.
Oh, just him.
Because he was too busy with the king, and he couldn't find the time to deal with his own health, psychological and spiritual.
Well, he was trying to be both a physician and a philosopher, you know.
Okay.
He was trying to do too much.
When, however, he is stricken by misfortunes in these courses he has pursued, he complains about God's decree and predestination, and begins to put the blame on the temporal and to be astonished at the latter's injustice and not helping him to obtain great wealth, which would permit him to procure a great deal of wine, so as always to be drunk, a number of concubines adorned with gold and precious stones of various kinds, so as to move him to copulate more than he is able to so do as to experience pleasure, as if the end of existence, the purpose, consisted merely in the pleasure of such an ignoble man. The error of the multitude of most human beings has arrived at the point where they impute to the Creator deficiency of power because of his having produced that which exists and endowed it with a nature entailing, according to their imagination, these great evils. Inasmuch as this nature does not help every vicious man to achieve the satisfaction of his vice, so that his corrupt soul should reach the term of its demand, which, according to what we've explained, has no limit. People always want more, and they end up killing themselves. And the Rambam claims that's most of what we call even this world is called what people do to themselves because of their envy and their desire for more and more physical pleasure, which for the Rambam is not a good at all. It's an evil. On the other hand...
Well, but a lot of times the reason people blame God is because rabbis, unfortunately,
you believe in,
raise us to believe that everything happens is basically God's doing. Mm-hmm. Come on.
I have to agree with Harry. He said a word of wisdom there. At least according to the Rambam.
I mean, I grew up thinking that way. But once I got on my shtetl, I started thinking.
You started learning the Guide to the Perplexed. Okay. On the other hand, men of excellence and knowledge have grasped and understood the wisdom manifest in that which exists. Right? That the way things exist, made of matter, is the best possible existence. As David has set forth, all the paths of the Lord are mercy and truth unto such as keep his commandment and his testimonies. Ooh, wait a second. What does that verse say? All the paths of the Lord are mercy and truth. So when you read that, you might think it's talking about divine intervention in your life.
Right.
No, says the Rambam, it's talking about the way things were created to begin with. The Lord created the world in the most merciful and true fashion, meaning that matter as it is the best possible way of being, and being is good. And there are certain privations that are part of that, but that's part of the good. And who gets this mercy and truth? Who experiences at such? Such who keep his commandment and his testimonies. And clearly, when he says covenant and testimonies in this context, it doesn't mean, or it doesn't just mean, keeping Shabbat and Kashrut. Mm-hmm. It means keeping the laws of nature. And that's part of God's covenant with human beings, qua human beings.
Wow.
That it's just like when you buy a washing machine and you don't read the manual and you put into it rock, you don't check the pockets of the shirts and there are rocks in there and it ruins the machine, then you go blame the guy who sold it to you. What do you mean? Don't blame him, blame yourself. You didn't read the manual. So the same thing here. If you end up chasing all of these imaginary pleasures of food and drink, etc., and then you get sick and you blame God. No. Don't blame God, blame yourself. You should have read the manual. By this he says...
Isn't it God's manual? Well...
Yes, but the manual is not just the Torah. The manual is the manual of nature.
Alright.
By this he says, meaning King David, that those who keep to the nature of that which exists, keep the commandments of the law, and know the ends of both, apprehend clearly the excellence and the true reality of the whole. So the Rambam, and this goes back to things I said to Jay half an hour ago, the Rambam puts three things together. To keep the nature of that which exists, and that means the laws of medicine, the laws of probability, the laws of safe driving, all of the laws of nature. Secondly, the commandments of the law, and that's part and parcel of the same thing. And then he says, who knows the ends of both? If you know the purpose of the Torah, which is to make life more successful, as explained half an hour ago, it has the same end as the laws of nature, which is to make life go according to life. If you know these two laws, and know their purposes and how they work, and you follow them, then you're in business. And if not, you're a fool. And don't blame anyone but yourself. And don't blame God. For this reason, they take as their end, or the wise men, see the purpose, the end is, means the purpose, that for which they were intended as men, namely apprehension. So here the Rambam goes into something else, I guess we'll have to stop here, that why is there, why is one supposed to live healthy? And why is one supposed to follow the Torah? Not just in order that your physical body will maintain its health and that society will maintain its health, but that itself is only a means towards a higher end, which is focusing your mind on truth, which is the health of the soul. The health of the body and society is a means towards the health of the soul, which is simply learning and knowing and understanding truth. And you'll never be able to learn and understand truth if you're sick. And you'll be sick if you don't follow the laws of nature.
So it's a prerequisite that you take care of your physical health.
Yeah. So everything, we have free will, we can follow the rules and reach the goal. And if we don't reach the goal, it's probably because we didn't follow the rules, either as individuals or as part of the collective. But don't blame God.
God forbid.
God forbid.
But yet, you know, you take a lot of the alcohol, but all the new running things, they say God will. God will.